first an interview with the Canadian geologist Dr. John Woodside, who dedicated most of his career to mud volcanoes. John Woodside works at the Free University in Amsterdam. He and many colleagues from all over Europe have been meticulously mapping the seafloor of the Mediterranean in search for these, until now, mysterious geological phenomena. The project, called MedMud, has indeed provided some insight in the millions of mud volcanoes which are scattered all over the globe, on land and in the seas. But how come most of us have never even heard about mud volcanoes? And what are they? Dr. Woodside.
Mud volcanoes are features on the surface of the Earth that look a lot like small stratovolcanoes or normal volcanoes, but they, instead of lava, they bring mud and gas up. They can range from very small, that I could put one in my room here, to several kilometers across. They're not usually very high. They can be a few hundred meters.
And what do they do? Do they just bubble along, or are they explosive volcanoes?
They bubble along. From time to time, they erupt as well. And this is where you get spectacular emissions of gas, which ignite. Thus, you get flames and smoke, which makes it look even more like a normal volcano, even though it isn't. They can be destructive in this regard, because if there are people living on the mud volcano, for example, as happened in the past, they can be covered in mud and gas and the settlement destroyed.
What do you mean, living on a mud volcano? Can they just appear?
No, I'm thinking of a site I visited in the Crimea, where there was an ancient Greek settlement, and the eruptions of this mud volcano were very seldom, so they didn't expect one, but when it came, it destroyed their settlement. Normally, we know where they are and what they look like and how often they're going to erupt. So they're, say, tame volcanoes. But
What do they look like? Is it like a mud bubble bath, or are they shaped like normal volcanoes?
They're shaped like normal volcanoes. They can be dome-shaped or cone-shaped. On top, they may have a large crater, like a normal volcano. And within the crater, you can get all kinds of activity. Small mud cones, bubbling mud and liquid. You get large lakes of fluid, which bubbles as well because of the gas. And these you see in the crater area of mud volcanoes on land. This also occurs at sea, underwater. If you visit a mud volcano on the seafloor, you often see the same thing. Crater, small areas of activity where mud is bubbling up, or there are actual pools of fluids that collect on the seafloor because they're denser than normal seawater. And then you have gas being processed by bacteria. So then you have these small mats of bacteria, and then you get other benthic organisms that either live in symbiosis with the bacteria or are living on the bacteria themselves.
Their entire ecosystems in themselves.
Exactly, yeah.
What causes mud volcanoes?
Mud volcanoes occur as a sort of pressure release in the earth. You get formation of rock or porous material deep down, sediment, that becomes overpressured for one reason or another, either because there's a lot of sediment being dumped on it. They can occur where there is pressure being applied to the sediment, for example, in places where two tectonic plates of the earth are being pushed together, you usually get a lot of sediment being squeezed up. And in these places, we find mud volcanoes also because of these pressures. But they usually occur over faults in the rocks and sediments above them, so that the faults form a sort of pressure release escape pathway for these fluids and overpressured gas and mud.
For you as a scientist and me as a science journalist, this is absolutely fascinating. But why are mud volcanoes important for the general public? In other words, why are we having this conversation?
Well, they're important for several reasons. They are a source of methane, and if they erupt suddenly, they can produce a lot of methane, which goes directly into the atmosphere.
A greenhouse gas.
A greenhouse gas. In fact, methane is a more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It doesn't live as long in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, but it is broken down to carbon dioxide, so you end up with the carbon dioxide anyway. One thing we need to find out is whether it's possible for large amounts of methane gas to come out of mud volcanoes suddenly during episodic eruptions. But we also learn a great deal about the geology in the area from mud volcanoes because they rip up pieces of rocks from deep formations in the earth and bring them to the surface, sort of a free drill hole. And this is useful for geologists, just understanding the geology of the area, but geologists also are responsible for finding resources such as oil and gas and so on, and this is one way of finding it.
But as I understood, the mud volcanoes themselves can be a source of energy.
Potential source of energy, if you wait for the gas to come out, it comes out sooner or later, but what is in fact happening in many cases is because mud volcanoes occur in areas where there are leaks from important reservoirs of gas, such as on the Nile deep sea fan or in the Caspian Sea. The oil companies are also interested in these areas. And in fact, in Kazakhstan, the Russians have been drilling into mud volcanoes because they know that's an easy way down to some reservoirs. And when you look at seismic profiles in these areas, you can see the gas escape pathways with gas rising from leaks in the reservoirs. A lot of the oil and gas reservoirs we exploit are also leaking. So we have natural leaks of gas and oil, which lead us often to these other reservoirs.
Much of your knowledge regarding mud volcanoes is based on research done in the Mediterranean. Tell me a bit about this research.
All my early research was from a boat using geophysical methods. It was only later, in the last 5-6 years, when we've started looking in detail at some of these seafloor phenomena, that we've used the French submersible Nautile, and that has been really fascinating for me, because most geologists want eventually to get and look at what they're examining, look closely at it on the seafloor.
And you did. You went down and saw it.
Yes, we went down and started looking at these features, which were now being mapped in unusual, extraordinary detail, in fact, using modern sonar mapping techniques.
And what other detecting techniques did you bring down there? It's not just looking and using sonar, I guess.
We've mapped the sea floor itself with sonar, and we've also mapped the deep subsurface using seismic methods and other geophysical methods. So when we go down, we also, or from the ship, we like to take samples of the seafloor. We take samples of the rocks being brought up through mud volcanoes so that we can understand the deep subsurface.
Well, you've come quite a long way and you've put mud volcanoes, so to speak, on the scientific map. But what would for you be the ultimate goal of your research?
Well, I think the ultimate goal as a scientist is to understand how it works.
Don't you?
We will never understand how it works completely, but the interesting thing is the journey of discovery, because the discoveries we make along the way are useful to us and interesting to us, but also useful to society as a whole. For example, this whole idea of understanding what we're doing to the Earth, whether global warming, for example, which is caused by us, is going to also become runaway. For example, if we cause gas hydrates to be dissociated in the deep sea.
Because we can accidentally make mud volcanoes as humans.
Yes, we can. So to me, understanding the mechanisms for mud volcanism, for example, we need to find out what are the fluxes of gases coming out. We want to be able to determine how often these erupt. We want to know how much is coming out while they're just resting and how much is coming out in big eruptions. We can see some of this on land, obviously in places like Azerbaijan where we have eruptions, because this is where all the deep piles of deep sediment are found.
So I'll guess your work will never be done.
Well, I think the the work of scientists is never done. As I say, the The interesting thing is what you find out along the way. And we always, whatever we find, which is interesting to us and exciting to us, usually ends up being of use to society. I think that's probably fair to say that it's always the case, which means that to some degree, science drives a lot of our technological innovation and how we behave with spaceship Earth.
Dr. John Woodside of the Free University in Amsterdam. And